Cairo, Seattle.
It's time to get schooled with a professor, John Clayton.
Welcome to Schooled with a Professor. Boy, we got a lot of history to go over here because, again, joining us on Schooled is Oliver Luck, who's now commissioner of the XFL.
Yes.
That's fantastic. We'll get into that.
But sure,
absolutely. Because, again, I go back when you were at West Virginia in college. In fact, I still remember breaking Kurt Warner when he came in as a running back. I broke that story.
Kurt Warner from Wyoming County, West Virginia.
Yeah.
And a kid like him to leave the state, and it's a relatively small state, as you know, so very few D1 caliber players. And he may have been, quite honestly, the all-time best player. Coming out outside of Sam Huff.
Right.
All-time best player coming out of West Virginia. But, you know, Joe Paterno getting him, you know, from underneath Bobby Bowden or whoever was coaching at the time
tough. Of course, that was so much fun because at that time there was such great rivalries with Pitt, Penn State, West Virginia.
Maryland was in the mix as well because we all played each other, right?
Oh, yeah.
And everybody was independent back then.
Well, in fact, I remember I was down at a Maryland-Penn State game, and, you know, we would have a cocktail party with Joe every Friday night. And, of course, that's when he was thinking about going into politics. And so it's like, he ends up.
Did you talk policy with him?
No, tax policy.
Like,
are you really going to get into politics? He says, "Well, we'll see." And right at the end of the season, now I never leak anything out of that room. Okay, so now somebody did leak it over to Jackie Sherrill. So now they have the Pitt-Penn State game at State College, and Jackie walks over to Joe and says, "Well, sorry if I'm ruining your career." Because his line was, "I'm not going to give up college football to the Jackie Sherrills and Barry Switzers of the world." I'm sorry if I ruined your political career. And then Joe just got furious.
Oh, yeah, I could see that.
But you know the rivalry.
Oh, yeah. Oh, it was intense. Those were they played at the end of the year, which I loved. It was always snowing, you know.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
And either it was at, you know, the Steelers building. Right? Three Rivers were in Penn, you know, State College. Those were good games.
Yeah.
I mean, those, you know, that was the peak demography, you know, for Pennsylvania as a state, right?
But then,
great high school talent coming out. And then, of course, a lot of the mills closed down and other things that changed, you know, the demographics a little bit. But that was a lot of fun.
But it was sad because right at that time, Joe was, you know, promoting the idea of all the rivalries and things like that. But then he took the tact that he wanted to, you know, take and get into the Big Ten. It's like, how did that go?
Yeah, you know, it's a good question right now to ask yourself, is Penn State better off in the Big Ten or being, you know, let's say some kind of an Eastern Conference?
Right.
I mean, there's a reason. You remember this. There's a reason that Tex Schramm decided he wanted to be in the NFC East.
And why was that?
Because of the marketplaces, New York, Philadelphia, right? All the way up and down the East Coast, Washington, D.C.
Yep. Yeah.
Dallas is not, you know, geographically in the East, but so I'm not sure that the college folks really appreciated how important that is. Is Maryland, God bless the Terps, are they better off, you know, in the Big Ten? I don't know.
Probably
not. Maybe financially, but I don't know. It's a big question. Is West Virginia better off in the Big 12? We had no other choice, quite honestly, right, in terms of getting in one of the Power 5, so we had to, and I was the AD there when we did that move. But it's a good question of whether, you know, whether college doesn't need another sort of reshuffling of the deck.
Yeah. Of course, if there's a reshuffling, the one who's going to be doing the dealings in the SEC, you know, Nick Saban. In fact, I still remember covering Nick Saban when he was recruiting. Because he would always recruit Western Pennsylvania, Youngstown, and all that stuff.
Right. Well, he's a native West Virginian. I was a freshman and sophomore at WVU, 78-79 football season, Nick was our defensive backs coach.
Yeah,
and I think that was his first full time job out of Kent State. You know, I think it was a GA for Don James for a little bit, and then I think that may have been his first. And we could tell right away he was going to be a hell of a coach. Nobody could predict his greatness, if you will, but we all had a pretty good idea he was tough.
I know the one thing with Nick was that because I would follow him and get stuff like that, and so he then became head coach with Miami Dolphins and that. And he was not suited for the NFL because he didn't have the control that he has in college. And, he would be kind of condescending in the press conferences. And then I'd sit there, and I'm the only one I could get him out of his game because it's like, well, I can't do it to you. You know too much about me.
Yeah.
So he was always great with me.
Yeah, no, I still have a good relationship. In fact, when Andrew was coming out of high school, you know, Nick called me often, you know, but a great guy.
Yeah.
And I'm still a very, very good West Virginia guy. He does a lot of things to help out folks back in his hometown, which is just south of Morgantown, a little coal mining camp.
By the way, are you proud of me? I did a metric involving Andrew, and I do a lot of stuff on the Colts pregame and all that stuff. And I said that he was going to win 8 or 9 games this year.
Wow.
And this is, of course, you know, he started the season against Seattle in the preseason. You can see he doesn't have all of his arm back because he missed, 640 days with throwing that. But I said, no, as long as he gets a little bit of a running game, I know the defense will get better. And again, he's never had a losing season.
Yeah.
And so I knew he would come through, and he got better and better. But how tough was it as a father to try to keep him into it, going through all that, kind of get back from the shoulder?
It was challenging as a parent, right?
Yeah.
So, my wife and I view our kid, right, as our kid, not
right.
necessarily as the, you know, quarterback of the Colts. So, you know, we kind of knew what he went through and doing all the rehab, not really knowing if he could throw like you have to throw to be a successful NFL quarterback. That's hard. It's hard both mentally and physically. So we were obviously relieved that he got back in there and was able to throw and, you know, have a velocity, and his arm strengthened, I think, as the season went on, which was great. He had a good team of people working with him, among them Tom House, who's just remarkable in terms of how he works with, you know, the best, you know, guys like, you know, Tom and others. So we're just happy he's back. And I think the best part of it is that he's now able to sort of get back in that normal rhythm, right? Take a couple of months off, recharge your batteries, and then get ready to go in April with, you know, OTAs and all that, right?
Right.
So that's good, because that rhythm was totally destroyed, if you will, based on the rehab that he had to do both in the U.S. and then over in Europe.
So now, yourself, it's like, having been a great, I mean, and I do mean this honestly, a great athletic director in college. I mean, you could have
gone. Well, thank you.
But then I was stunned when you took the job as commissioner of the XFL. Tell us what happened with that.
Well, I was at the NCAA. I was, the EVP of Regulatory Affairs, you know, right below Mark Emmert, who I consider a good friend and really admire Mark. He's got a tough job, no question.
Yeah.
But I'm very happy doing what I love, college sports. I was very happy at the NCAA. When I had heard that Vince was interested in relaunching, one of his people reached out to me and said, hey, would you take a meeting with Vince? And I said, sure. I, you know, don't know the man, but admire what he's built. I'm not a wrestling fan, but, WWE is a pretty successful company.
Oh, yes.
Their stock, you know, price is going through the roof. It's awesome. So I sat down, and I was skeptical because I remember, like you do, you know, 2001 XFL. And I basically, you know, said, Vince, share with me, you know, your thoughts on why this will be different, because I love the game of football. I've been around startups, NFL Europe, and, you know, even in the soccer world, the Dynamo. But I love football too much to make it a gimmick, right? I don't want to cheapen the game, because this game matters to this country, right? Rightly or wrongly, it matters. It's an integral part of the fabric of America. So he, you know, very persuasively walked through what he was going to do. And he basically said, listen, I know we made a mistake in 2001. We didn't have the right people doing it. We didn't focus on what really matters, which is good quality football. And he said, I want to hire somebody like you, Oliver, who's done this before, who's built leagues and teams, and, you know, I'm going to give you all the football responsibility. And, you know, I thought to myself, how often does a well-capitalized football league launch? It doesn't happen very often.
Yeah.
I'm 58. You know, this probably is my last real job, you know. But, so I thought this is something I'm going to have fun with, and I love the game, and I want to make sure we can do it right, because the game deserves it. I think, John, the game, pro level, college, even high school, is at a high watermark. The game's as entertaining as it's ever been. These guys are so much better than we were back in the 80s. And I bumped into Kenny Houston, one of my old teammates, and Jackie Slater.
Yeah.
Those were great players. The guys today are all better. It's unbelievable. Because it's a 12-month-a-year job. They got performance coaches and strength coaches and nutritionists and private coaches, right?
Yeah.
Rehab, private rehab guys. So I think it's the right time. The economy's, you know, pretty strong. People do want to watch more football in the spring, right? You know, for all of us who face the void of no football after Super Bowl, we want to watch in the spring. So I think it's the right time. And Vince, you know, is putting hundreds of millions of dollars behind this. So I decided this is something I really want to get involved with.
Yeah, because the sad part is there was so much gimmickry to the old XFL. Because, I mean, the one thing, it's like, if you go back and remember, it's like, what thing do you remember? He hate me.
Yeah.
He hate me. It's like, that's the one thing.
And here's the irony of that. Rod Smart. Was he hate me? That's the individual's name. He played for the had a good NFL career. Played for the Panthers in the Super Bowl, right?
Right.
You know, and was a good player, a very good player. But, you know, people know him as he hate me because the jersey, right?
Right.
And that was viewed as gimmicky by, I think, most National Football League and major college football fans. So, you know, we can innovate, we can do things a little bit differently, but we don't want to be gimmicky. That's sort of our standard, right?
What's going to be the challenge right now in getting the players? Because obviously, you know, it's a time right now where parents of children are, you know, not allowing their kids to play football because they worry about concussions and stuff. And so, and you can look around the high schools, and it's a little bit of a dip as far as participation. How's it going to be to get all the players?
Well, I mean, there is a little bit of a dip in overall participation. No question about that. That's offset, interestingly, because I'm on the board of USA Football that tracks all this.
Right.
That's offset by the massive increase in the number of kids playing flag football, including girls, which is really, which is kind of cool to see. We don't necessarily have to worry about the demographics. We're interested in getting the best, you know, 450 players we can get, you know, for our league. I mean, you know the drill, right? So September 1st of this past year, every one of the 32 NFL teams cuts down from 90-man to 53-man. 900 guys are out of work.
Right.
Right? So we went back the last 4 or 5 years and said, all right, of those 900 guys, how many of them cycled right back into the league that same year, right, due to injury or performance or whatever? About 200, 225 of those guys, you know. So that leaves, based on my West Virginia math, about 650, 675 guys who are out of work, you know, and that happens, as you know, every year. So we think those guys are all quality players. They're good. They just might be a little bit too small, too slow, too unfocused. You know, they might not be in the right place at the right time. Think about this. Think about all the good kids playing college football at the quarterback position. Right?
Right.
And you got basically 64 jobs, 32 teams times two, right? Very few people carry three active, you know, quarterbacks. And, you know, Tom doesn't retire. You know, Ben doesn't retire. Philip, Eli, you know, my kid, right? You know, these guys play forever, you know, right? Why? Because they can make a lot of money and they love doing it, right? As Matt Ryan said, the game is now extending the careers of a lot of, you know, players because of the protection of the quarterback. So you've got unbelievable quarterbacks at the college level who can't make the 53-man. They do a couple of years in the practice squad and they're out.
Yeah.
So that's the pool of players that I think we can pull from.
Well, what I'm wondering about, because I'm to your point, it's like I track this down every year. I mean, for two out of the last 3 years, there were 9 backup quarterbacks on teams that never played it down.
Yep.
Never played it down.
Well, listen, I know from being a backup quarterback behind Warren Moon, who was, you know, Hall of Fame player, and not just a great athlete, but a great person, you know, and a great Seattle guy, right?
Yeah.
UW, but, you know, I know that your skill set goes down when you don't play, right? So the opportunity for, you know, a backup or a third string guy in the practice squad to come play in the XFL, play 10 games, the same thing will happen to those guys as I saw happen to Kurt Warner in NFL Europe, John Kitna, Jake Delhomme, right?
Mm-hmm.
Brad Johnson won a Super Bowl.
Yeah.
Brad Johnson would have not won that Super Bowl with the Bucs had he not had that 10-game stretch as the London Monarchs quarterback because he saw live action. Bullets were flying. And that's what you need as a quarterback. You know, you're not going to get any better on the practice squad. I mean, right now, think about this. I mean, I'm dead serious. Right now, if you're third-string guy and you're in the practice squad and you want to get better, the CBA doesn't even allow you to work with your coach.
Mm-hmm.
Until basically the middle of April.
Yeah.
So you've got to go to a high school field and throw the ball with your buddy from college or something, right, to get any – and that's not going to get you better. What's going to get you better is playing 10 games in a league like the XFL where there's real live bullets flying. I mean, that's the challenge for all these – all these younger quarterbacks. Now, I appreciate that because I was one of them, know, and I really did see my skill set decline. I'll never forget, it was a game that I got into. We were playing the Cleveland Browns. I'm a Cleveland native, and I was throwing, Warren got hurt, and I was throwing a crossing pattern to Drew Hill, you know, and Frank Minifield stepped up, right, and you know, made and picked me off, right, and I remember thinking to myself, damn, you can't throw those kind of passes in practice because guys aren't going 100%. You know, they're all going 75%, and you're running the scout team, basically. So it really is, in my mind, a factor. So I think based on that sort of rationale, I think we'll have a you know, pretty good opportunity to get some pretty good quarterbacks that are talented kids.
Will you be going for some of the older players? Because one of the stories that came out this week, which is a reality, is that the league is getting much younger in the National Football League. I mean, experience level goes from 4.6 to 4.3. I think it went from like 860 players who were third year or longer in the league, and that went down to like in the 600s. And so now there's a pool of guys, because what happens in the league is that they don't want to give a third contract.
That's right.
That's after 8 years.
Yep.
We'll try to incorporate some of the older players that are going to be on the street.
Yeah, there are some guys that we're interested in who've been around the block, and we'd love to have them play. We want to make sure they're healthy.
Right.
Because the danger is, to be very blunt, right, the danger is an older guy has got, you know, you're always carrying some injuries around, and you sign with the XFL, and two weeks in or 3 weeks in, you're hurt, and then you got workers' comp and all that sort of stuff. So we got to be careful. But, yeah, we want to put the best players on the field. And if that means a guy who's had 6 or 7 years of experience playing as a backup, sure. You know, we're open to that.
How about the competition with the Alliance of American Football?
So they're launching, as you know, next week. I don't see much of a competition. They're not in our markets. They're in what I would call the college markets, Birmingham and Memphis and Salt Lake. They've signed the players they've signed. We have better television deals. We'll announce our broadcast deal in a couple of weeks. I think we'll announce our head coaches in a couple of weeks. And we got some really solid head coaches, many of whom have NFL experience as a head coach and major college experience. I think we can provide better benefits, i.e. money.
Okay, that's
and that matters, right, for these guys. We're going to be in places like CenturyLink Field and Raymond James and MetLife and NFL buildings. So I wish the AAF well. I like Charlie Ebersole. I have all the respect in the world for Bill Polian, a great personnel guy. But we've got our business plan, and we're going to do what we think we need to do, to build our league.
Talk about the beginning history of the Seattle franchise, how that came about, how people involved with that.
Well, so we started off with about 35, 40 cities, right, that had an interest in, hosting an XFL franchise. And you whittle that down to about 18, then you whittle that down to about 12 really serious candidates, right? Because you need a lot of things. You need the right stadium, you need the right marketplace, you need the right sort of amount, if you will, or number of passionate football fans. And, I've always been a huge fan of the city of Seattle. There's something in the water up there. I don't know what it is, because I've been up to Seahawk games. I've been to Sounders games. I ran the Houston Dynamo when we used to go up there and play the Sounders in playoff games. In fact, we beat them, I know, at least once or twice up there to make it into the MLS Cup final. I remember going to UW games, when Stanford would play up there. It rocked. It always rocked. It was loud. It was passionate. I used to love to go watch games there, So as we were thinking about it, right, we wanted to have a West Coast presence, and you've got L.A., you've got San Francisco, you got, of course, Seattle, and I said I was very, very blunt about this. I said to Vince, I said, Seattle's a great marketplace, and he's had his own experience up there with WrestleMania and SmackDown and all the events that WWE does, and I think we all agreed that there's something very special about Seattle and the way people support their teams. I think, right, the National Hockey League franchise, whatever it's going to be called, that thing's already sold out,
I remember I was at the owner's meeting, and they opened up the sale with put the deposits down. Within 12 minutes, they had the 10,000. 12 minutes.
Think about that.
They ended up getting 30,000.
And I can even go back, when I was an Oiler playing in the old Kingdom. Right up against Jim Zorn and Dave Craig and whoever it was. I mean, that was rocking way back in the day. Back in the early '80s or whenever that was going on. So I've always been impressed with Seattle as a sports town, and I think it gives us an opportunity to really have a passionate fan base. Because I'm not sure there's a better fan base in the NFL than Seahawks fans. Seriously.
Yeah. Well,
I love my Colts. I'm a Cleveland native. And I love Brown fans. Right, because I was one of them for many years growing up.
Listen, as a Pittsburgh guy, I feel for the Brown fans because I've seen them suffer now for so long.
They're going to get better.
Yeah, they are.
They're absolutely on the right path. John Dorsey has done a remarkable job. He really has. And I'm friends with Baker Mayfield. In fact, my wife, Kathy, is very good friends with Gina Mayfield, Baker's mom.
Okay.
We lived in the same Texas community for a number of years, and I'm really happy to see Baker do well. He's a young gunslinger. I like that.
Now, I'm sure, working with Vince McMahon, he's still going to do some promotional things, because, again, that's his he knows how to promote things. He knows how to get licks to think of it. I guess, how do you keep some of the gimmickry away and just keep it good football?
Well, I think that's up to us, right, to do that. I think I've got a good sort of bead on you know, what Americans like about football, you know, where you can innovate, right, and where you probably can't innovate, right, where it might be gimmicky. And it's a, you know, it's a fine line, right? You know, some people might think that when you run out of the locker room and touch Howard's rock, that that's kind of gimmicky, but don't tell that to Clemson people.
True.
Because, right? You know,
don't do it Del Rio and put the thing
so, yeah, you know, we've got to be smart. Yeah. And, you know, listen, I'm hiring 8 head coaches, and these are all guys that are extraordinarily experienced, and I'll rely heavily on their, you know, sort of judgment, right? Because they'll know, and we'll release names relatively soon, but they'll know, you know, what's gimmicky and what's not, right? What's cheesy and what's really appropriate. And we do plan to innovate. That's important. We have a number of things that we want to do a little bit differently. We've got some very interesting ideas about a different kickoff. It's also safer than the current kickoff because the kickoff return is a, you know, it's a endangered species right now. You hardly ever see it anymore. We got a different idea for overtime. So we have a number of things we want to do a little bit differently. But, yeah, at the end of the day, it's going to be 11-on-11, outdoors, same size field, 4 downs. You know, it'll be very familiar to football fans.
Oliver, I thank you so much. Now I feel better about it because now I see that you're getting in there because, again, I've always had the greatest respect for you both as a player, AD, all these different things that you've had. And it's like, I wish you good luck.
I appreciate that, John. Thank you very much. It's great to be on your show.
Thank you.
And that does it for this week's podcast. In between episodes, you can follow me on Twitter at ClaytonESPN. If you enjoy these weekly one-on-one conversations, consider leaving a review on iTunes or wherever you're listening to the show. Thanks for listening. See you next time on Schooled with a Professor.